Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Thank you, Mr. Gary Lynn Floyd, and gentlemen of the band, keep on walking. That's what we're doing. We're doing it together. Good morning. I'm Joyce DeFalo, the assistant minister here, and if we haven't met, I'm the assistant minister here, yes. Very pleased to stand in for Dr. Edward, who will, of course, be back next week, and also he'll be back Wednesday evening for our glorious Thanksgiving Eve service. For many of us, the people of paradise who have lost homes and loved ones are on our minds and in our hearts and prayers this morning, and I'm pleased to let you know that our center has arranged for a way that we can very directly provide financial assistance. We've been in touch with Reverend Andy of the Paradise Center for Spiritual Living, and he let us know that the best way to financially assist the people of Paradise is with Visa gift cards, which can be used for the daily necessities of life. So today, we're collecting Visa gift cards or donations at the information table in the social hall. Or there's also a way you can more personally send your Visa card with a note of love by mailing them to Reverend Mary Mitchell of the Redding Center, who's driving over to Paradise to hand deliver the cards. You'll see her address is in the bulletin. Or if you're looking for another way to assist, you'll also find a list of other resources for ways to give also at the information table. I'm reminded of the outpouring of love that came to us from all over the country last year, and I'm very pleased that our center has found a way to make it easy for us to now help others who are in need. So I'd like to begin to introduce today's topic with a story. It's a story that happens on the other end of winter, just the beginning of spring. It's New York City, and there's a young woman who walks out of her apartment, just savoring this beautiful spring day. She's blind, but she can feel the warmth of the sun and the lightness of the air on her skin, of course. And she walks down the street, and she's standing at a crosswalk when she hears a very resonant male voice next to her say to her, "May I have the pleasure of your company as I cross the street?" So it's so sweet, and she takes his arm, and they make their way slowly across the street, and they're enjoying the spring and sharing comments about it. And she does notice that toward the end of their walk, they're hearing honks from New Yorkers. I mean, whoever heard of that? But they make it safely to the curb. And as they take a few steps down the street, he gently releases her arm, and he says to her, "Thank you so much for taking the time to accompany a blind man across the street." This story came to mind because today's topic is When the Blind Lead the Blind. And it is the title of an essay in Living the Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes. We've been going through this all year. We're now on page 388. When the blind lead the blind is actually a teaching phrase that Jesus used, and it didn't end so well when he used it. He said that when the blind lead the blind, they both end up in the ditch. So what's the point that is trying to be made here? Well, on one level, it's a reminder to us that we have to be careful what thought we're following. If it's a negative thought or a false idea we're following, whether it's our own or somebody else's, it's not going to lead us to a happy place. After years of avoiding the news at night and in the morning, I have fallen into this habit, I confess, of, when the little alarm goes off on my cell phone, I just look at that email, and the first dirt I can find on any politician, I'm right there. And it's like, then I wake up, then I sort of wonder why I'm not in such a great mood. So note to self, do not do that. This phrase, when the blind lead the blind, they end up in a ditch, also is a warning that it's not a good idea to believe everything that we're told, that we read, that we hear. Have you noticed? Oh my gosh. To be on guard, not to accept that which is not true. Such good advice for our time. Rather than following blindly what other people are telling us, to really stop and assess, what do I know to be true? So that's what the phrase means on one level. But if we look at the idea of the blind leading the blind more deeply, it starts to get more interesting. For Holmes points out that we all have blind spots. Really, I said to myself, moi? I'm not particularly aware of any blind spots. Of course, I'm not aware of them when I'm driving either. You know, I mean, I went to go in the right lane the other day and I looked in the mirrors, I looked over my shoulder, all was well, I went into the right lane. There was a car. Where did it come from? I don't know, except it made me realize that blind spots are a physical reality. And Holmes tells us that something similar is happening psychologically. He says this, wherever there is an emotional bias, that there will be an intellectual blind spot. This means that we cannot think with truthful clarity about things that we are too emotionally affected by. Have you noticed? Not you, but somebody you know, if they have too big of an emotional charge about someone or something, they don't seem to be thinking clearly or acting rationally about it. Have you noticed that? I tried to think about myself and my own blind spots, and as far as I can tell, I don't have any. As far as I can tell, I am always rational. However, on occasion, someone else has pointed out to me that what I was thinking or doing was not totally rational. And after great amazement and mystification about what they were talking about, I have, on occasion, seen a blind spot in my own thinking. The fact is, I can't see my own blind spots. I need help. I need your help. Now, I can see blind spots at work in other people. And I literally mean that I can see blind spots at work. But I don't realize that they're blind spots for the person. I just think the person's doing something very strange, and by the way, they're wrong. Has that happened to you? You have a friend you really like, great person, great all-around person, and then one day they do something that seems odd. It's very easy to pass judgment. It may even be easy to write them off as no longer worthy of being a friend. So it's important to remember that what we're witnessing here is them speaking or acting from one of their blind spots. This is actually the good news of this reading. It's the liberating news to know that we all have blind spots, that we all, from time to time, act in a way that isn't rational, then we can become more understanding and tolerant of each other. We can exercise forgiveness. We can forgive ourselves when we do something that someone points out is a bit odd. And we can forgive others when they do something that seems odd or crazy or less than perfect. From our book of the month, Pema Chodron tells us, when we can recognize our own confusion with compassion, we can extend that compassion to others who are equally confused. Isn't that nice? We recognize our own confusion, and then we can be compassionate when we see confusion in others. You know, this also gives us permission to not stay stuck in the ditch of our own limited thinking. We don't have to defend ourselves. We don't have to stay stuck in our position. We can open to other possibilities. It's interesting, you know, how this metaphor of blindness shows up in other traditions, and I think it's the perfect time to turn once again to that familiar story of that comes out of Hinduism of the five blind men and the elephant. Feel free to lip sync along. There are five blind men, and they don't know what an elephant is. They've heard of one, but they don't know. So one day, an elephant is coming to town, and they go, aha, we're going to find out what is an elephant. So they go, and they surround the elephant. And one's got the ear, and he says, ah, this thing is like a fan. And another one's got his arms around a leg, and he says, what are you talking about? This thing is like a tree. And another one's feeling the side, and he says, you are both wrong. It's like a wall. And the one at the tail says, you're nuts. It's like a rope. And the one at the trunk is saying, I don't know. I've known you a long time. I always thought you were rational people, but this thing is like a snake. And so they're arguing. They're arguing back and forth about what an elephant is, not realizing that each one is only perceiving a part of the whole, and that the others also have a part of the whole truth. Each one entrenched and convinced that he is right and not listening to the others. It's a story about how, as we attempt to know the Divine One, we cannot know it in its wholeness. But each of us can understand a part. And we have to realize that it's just ridiculous to get caught in theological conflicts. Holmes talks about theological conflicts right here. He says, people are prone to say that they alone are right, or their system of thought alone is right. They have not yet gotten a clearance back to the fundamental proposition that God is one and that everyone is an incarnation of the same God. Therefore, intolerance and harshness, unkindness and criticism, coldness and indifference are projected. This is one of those tricks which the mind plays on us. He's telling us here that when we forget that there is only one thing and that you and I are part of it, when we forget that you and I are equally expressions of this divine one, when we forget that you and I are one, then we fall into intolerance and judgment of each other. Judgment of each other's mistakes. Judgment of each other's differing viewpoints. Judgment of each other's differing beliefs. There's a story in the Bible about this very thing, and we'll go through the story, and then we'll also look at it from a metaphysical point of view. It's a story that takes place after Jesus has passed on from this plane. And it's a story about a man who was stuck in his intolerance of other religious beliefs. His name was Saul, and he was so convinced that his own belief system was true that he was persecuting others who had different beliefs. Particularly, he was persecuting those people following the teachings of Jesus. So one day, Saul is on the road to Damascus, on his way to persecute Christians. And all of a sudden, there's a great blinding light that causes Saul to fall to the ground. And there's a voice, interestingly, that he alone heard, not the others with him. And the voice said, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" And Saul said, "Who are you?" And the voice said, "I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you prosecute. Go into the city, and you'll be told what to do." At this point, Saul is blind. So his companions lead him into the city, and he is in a room where he's unable to see for 3 days, during which time he didn't eat or drink. He also received an inner vision of a man named Ananias and was told that Ananias would come to him. And indeed, Ananias did come, touched Saul's eyes, and Saul's vision was restored. Well, after this changed viewpoint, Saul embraced the teachings of Jesus. He became one of the great early Christian teachers. He changed his name to Paul. So let's now look at this from a metaphysical point of view. And by that, I mean a metaphysical consideration of a story or of anything, really, is looking at it with the understanding that we are looking at ourselves, that everything in the story is about our own consciousness. From this perspective, it's actually a story about moving spiritually from a place of separation and judgment to a place of oneness. So, at the beginning of the story, here's Saul, or perhaps we ourselves, so blinded by his own viewpoint. He's not only judging people, but he's harming them. Then there is an experience of light, light of consciousness, light of truth, light of understanding. Saul falls to the ground. He has fallen into the ditch where his error thinking has led him. Then there's a voice. No one else hears it. It's an internal voice. It identifies itself as Jesus. Now, whenever we hear a reference to Jesus, we know that it's a reference to our own Christ consciousness. And what is meant by Christ consciousness is that aspect of ourselves that knows we are divine. So this divine aspect says, "Why are you persecuting me? Why are you hurting me? Why are you resisting your own divine nature? Why are you denying your own wholeness?" It's an invitation to move from a perception of separation to the true understanding of oneness. It's a spiritual transformation. And in this case, it's symbolized by the 3 days that Saul can't see. He can't see the world that he used to know. And he doesn't eat or drink. There's a cleansing. There's an emptying out of the old to make room for the new. And during the 3 days, his inner wisdom is activated. He receives an internal vision of what will happen And indeed it does. What I like about this ancient story is that it assures us that it's possible to have our lives illumined and guided in such a way that we know our own divinity. And it gives us hope that there is a way out of our own judgment, our own separation, back into wholeness. So what do we do when we find ourselves in the ditch of judgment and separation? Well, first, we can remember that God is everywhere, even in the ditch. And being in a ditch, we can look up. We can look with our spiritual eyes to that heightened awareness of our true nature, your true nature, of being inseparably one with God, one with good, living in a universe that is for you always. And we can remember that there is that within us which is not blind. There is that within us which is untouched by anything we've ever thought, untouched by any temporary error in understanding, untouched by anything we've ever said or done. We can remind ourselves that the full light of consciousness is always on, and that no one has the power to mislead us, not even ourselves. We can be guided by these words of Ernest Holmes from today's reading. The problems we face are not external, they are within. They are not some other person's fault. Neither are they necessarily our own fault. They are the fault of ignorance, from which enlightenment alone can free us. Now, ignorance, as far as I can tell, seems to have two meanings. It can mean ignorance as in not knowing something, or it can be ignorance as in not seeing something, ignoring something, not paying attention to something, like, you know, like, oh, just ignore him. So if I'm in that ditch of judgment, of separation, it's an invitation to look again. What am I ignoring? What am I not seeing? What am I not paying attention to? What part of the wholeness am I missing? It's an invitation to bring the light of truth, leading us back to knowing that there's only good eternally, and each one of us is part of it. So right here, right now, I'd like us to bring that light into our own minds. I invite you to turn within for a couple minutes, noting if you're feeling comfortable in your chair. I invite you to bring to mind a situation that seems difficult at the moment. Can be a little challenge, can be a big challenge. It's a little something you're working on. And with that situation in mind, we simply ask the divine within, show me that which I have been ignoring, that which I have not been seeing. And for this situation, we affirm, may I see this situation as Spirit does. And now I invite you to bring to mind a person you may have been judging. Somebody you know, somebody who's a stranger. With them in mind, we say to the divine within, show me that which I have not been seeing. May I know this person as God does. And finally, we shine the divine light of consciousness onto ourselves. Asking the question, how does the Divine One see me? Show me the good that I am, that I have not yet seen. So I give thanks for this time together. I give thanks for this possibility of divine guidance that is always operative in our life. I remember that there is one source of all wisdom, of all good, of all love, and that it is with each and every one of us every step of the way. I rejoice in how that truth shows itself to be so in the time, the days, the hours, the weeks, the years that follow, always, always knowing that each of us is one with the Divine One and all good is unfolding. In gratitude, I simply say, Amen.